This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up this hour. We'll get more into week 15 of the NFL. Three games left. We got Monday Night Football game tonight, but it's not going to affect anything between the Packers and the Rams. But nevertheless, if you're looking at the playoff picture, it does get really, really interesting. The Chargers have now got the sixth seed in the AFC thanks to a win against Tennessee, and Tennessee is reeling now. They've lost four in a row, and Jacksonville, with their comeback against the Cowboys, and they win it on a pick six in overtime, are now one game back in the division. But there was another division that I've been keeping my eye on, and a lot of it is because of the mediocrity that's within that division, and that is the NFC South. So yesterday in the early games, you saw the New Orleans Saints win against the Atlanta Falcons. The Falcons starting Desmond Ridder at quarterback. Marcus Mariota is done with them. He's got a knee issue. He's going to have surgery. He's likely never to play for the Falcons again. Ridder was ineffective throwing the ball. They had to run the ball in order to score. They didn't win. Andy Dalton threw a couple of touchdowns. The Saints and the Falcons are now tied tied in their record at 5-9. And the Carolina Panthers, they lost to the Steelers, and they end a two-game losing skid. They are also 5-9. None of those teams, except for the Saints, were damaged at all. Well, the Saints didn't get damaged. The Saints helped themselves by that win, because now there's a three-way tie for second place in the division, because the Cincinnati Bengals beat Tampa Bay at Raymond James Stadium, and with the Bucs blew a 17-point lead, and Cincinnati wins that game, and the Buccaneers, they fall to 6-8. And now still lead that group by one game. So Atlanta losing and the Panthers losing did not change their fate at all in the division. Just gave them less time to try to work their way into the equation of winning that division. I don't know who's going to win that division, to be honest with you. You would think you still would trust the Buccaneers, but I don't. I don't know who's going to win it. Somebody is, and some really, really flawed team is going to win that division and make the playoffs. We've seen it every now and then in this league where a losing record wins it. It's not that common, though. It doesn't happen a lot. But I think it's going to happen. I don't think Tampa Bay is going to emerge and have a winning record when this is all said and done. That's a very, very flawed football team, as is everybody else in that division. The NFC South is worth paying attention to just for that alone. Good, the Bad, and the Dumb is coming up next as we continue with Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What a idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue. Good Monday to you. All right, we got our off next week for the holiday, so get in the good, the bad, and the dumb when you can for 2022. The good of the day.
Good of the day. Well, I mean, after a weekend we just had, I mean, it was a phenomenal good all weekend long. But the good of today, I just could not get enough of all the videos pouring out of Argentina.
Yeah, that was really great.
From drone footage over their big market square. I don't know what it's called. There was one video after, I think it was after Messi scored his first goal, that penalty kick early in midway through the first half. Someone shot a video from their balcony, from their patio, like their high-rise balcony, and you could hear the entire city cheering.
I know. That's the awesome thing about this. It is do we get these stories even locally with local teams and local sports?
No, I don't think we would.
Why don't we have video? Like, I get it. We're not okay. So it's not our
The closest thing I could think of was when the pandemic was at its height and everything was shut down. Remember, like in New York City, they used to do 5 o'clock where everyone would cheer and thank the nurses.
Yeah.
That was the closest I can come up with.
But I'm looking at it like the Super Bowl. Like, yeah, why don't we ever see, like, and this is Greenville, Ohio, 2 hours outside of and just screaming after touchdowns. Like,
I mean, there were,
we never get those. And we got them all the time over the weekend from Argentina. And even France. They were showing scenes in France.
There was a huge watch party in Messi's hometown in Argentina.
Yeah.
Like it was like a Mecca to head there, the travel destination.
I mean, yeah, that's wild.
For his hometown. I mean, but the video, like, if you haven't seen it, you got to check it out. It's just someone taking a video from the high-rise condo that they live in or apartment that they live in Buenos Aires. And he just is outside of his balcony. And the entire city is cheering. You could hear cheering. You could hear those horns blowing.
I guess the thing is, like, we see it on college campuses. Like,
yeah.
You'll see, like, in the NCAA Final Four, you'll see a kid make a key three-pointer, and they'll show you, like, the arena back home or the street back home or a bar back where they are. And,
yeah, or when Tennessee beat Alabama.
Yeah,
and like, you know, you saw like the entire student body marching down
like
Main
that.
Street
and things like that. I'm not trying to wax poetically here. There really isn't a real scientific answer as to why this stuff matters. It just matters. We're just wired in a way where it matters. There's a lot of it is pride. A lot of it is attaching yourself to something that makes you feel good, right? Whatever, it's the entertainment, it's the emotional part of the entertainment. However it is, it matters. It's not just a if anything, when people say, oh, this entertainment is for the bourgeois, it's not. It's for everybody. You're talking about third world countries that watch this, that found a way to watch this around the globe. It matters. It matters to people. It's a big deal. The one thing is, I was thinking about this yesterday because I'm trying to put this like in a bigger picture here. I know that the Super Bowl, for example, is seen around the globe, right? I know that NFL Films will show you radio crews from Italy, England, China. There's all sorts of broadcast teams that come to the Super Bowl to broadcast the Super Bowl. It's broadcast around the world. It's absorbed. But it doesn't matter to a lot of people around the world, right? Like, our game doesn't have the global feel of this game, right? So somebody in Italy might watch the Super Bowl, maybe out of curiosity. Maybe they are a fan of an NFL team. Maybe they just like the way the game is played. But to know that billions of people were watching this, and it mattered to the billions of people around the world. There wasn't just, oh, I'll just tune in because why not? Like, people in Bangladesh were interested in this match. Like, people mm-hmm. around the globe were interested in the outcome of this match. Not looking at it as a curiosity or just looking at it because it was a big event on a day and why not? There's nothing else on TV. Like, this event, this game, there weren't just watchful eyes in Argentina and France. There were fans of these guys around the globe. And it really was impressive. It really was amazing to see that feeling of we're all on this planet. So many of us are watching these men play this game.
Yeah,
like that. That's like there was one scene, and I'll go on. There was one scene I wanted to take a picture of it on my TV. Was they did this wide shot before Messi's penalty kick, and he's walking to the bald area, and they have this wide shot, and it's just him and the pitch, and he's just walking, and I'm thinking, this guy has the world in the palm of his hands. The entire world is in the palm of his hand. He is the only person in the globe that matters right now to billions of people. What he's going to do in the next minute. And it was a great shot because there was no teammates. They didn't even show you the goalie. They just panned out enough to show Messi walking to where he's going to kick the ball just before that. It's great. It was a great shot. And I should have taken a picture of it just to show you the level of largeness to this event to one man. It was wild. All right, let's get to
damn, you just trumped the good with that poetry right there.
Well, I see these things and I go, oh,
yeah.
Part of the big picture thing.
You're 1,000% right, because at that moment, I mean, everyone was at the edge of their seat looking at him.
Him. So what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day, sticking kind of with the World Cup theme, Matt Ryan's wife roast her husband's historic meltdown with a World Cup tweet she had put out. What an incredible game between Argentina and France makes you totally forget about anything crazy that may have happened in the NFL yesterday. Which, you know, I'm not really putting the bat on her.
I give her the credit.
Yeah. I'm not putting the bat on her. We were talking earlier that, you know, like Jacoby Myers, Leon Lett, they're known for singular plays.
Right, right.
More than anything in their career. I mean, Jacoby Myers is now on his way.
No matter what they do, they just carry this with them, right?
Do we need to start looking at this for Matt Ryan?
I am surprised Matt Ryan is going in today. Like, don't you just
call it?
You just go,
you call it a career, right?
I'm out of here. I can't. You know what? When the going gets tough, quit. I'm done. I can't do this anymore.
When somebody posted on Twitter that he's blown the biggest NFC Championship lead, the biggest Super Bowl lead, and the biggest lead overall, I just sat there. I was like, man, this is that is rough. I didn't know about the NFC Championship lead. I knew about the Super Bowl, obviously. We all know 28-3. Now we have 33-0.
Yeah.
I mean, you're done, right? This is your legacy, really?
I don't know what, like, it. I got fooled a little bit on this. I thought the guys still had a little gas in the tank, and the Colts would be, they were good enough to sort of kick it and get the extra mileage out that he needed. And it hasn't worked out that way. He's been a mess. He started, then he was benched, and now he's starting again. Ugh, they've gone through this coaching change. It's not a good football team. And for this to be on his resume, to add this to his resume of these kind of levels of failure.
I'm using achievements loosely because that's what it's an achievement again.
I would just go, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm out. You know what? You wanted to start Sam Ellinger, start him.
You want to start that guy in the fifth row? Start him.
I want to have some level of respect for myself in the morning. I can't play. I'm not playing this anymore.
I mean, it's unreal.
It's really unreal. He couldn't sustain one more scoring drive. Couldn't do one more, just like against the Patriots in the Super Bowl. We're not asking him to score two more touchdowns. We're asking him to score one field goal, just to add yet another element to another obstacle for the team to overcome. Right, like one more. Ugh. Goodness gracious. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is that like a couple hours before the Cardinals and Broncos were set to kick off, you could find $12 tickets.
And isn't that crazy?
$12 NFL tickets.
This game featured two. No, it featured three backup quarterbacks when you have Cole McCoy, Trace McSorley, and Brett Rypien playing in this game. Kyler Murray versus Russell Wilson, no. Two teams vying for playoff spots, no. Like, check off all the things that might have made this interesting at the beginning of the season.
Well, and that's the key, right? You look, go back from the beginning of the season. Cardinals were supposed to be a contender.
Sure. Sure,
they've grown. Why shouldn't Russell Wilson in a new area with, you know, a decent team? Why wouldn't that be a threat? And this looked great on paper.
I don't think you would have had a lot of people saying, look, I don't know if the Broncos will make the playoffs, but they should be in the conversation by week 15, right? And now, same thing with
potentially, I could have seen this game being flexed.
$12 tickets.
But $12 tickets. I mean, you can't even get a drink for $12 at an NFL stadium.
Crazy. It's crazy. That's how the mighty.
And not to be outdone, I mean, you know, there were $12 was the cheapest. There were $15 and $16 tickets as well. So
right.
You know, if you didn't get the $12 one, you could have definitely got 16.
Look, I don't care what organization you're buying, right? I don't. If you have a chance to buy an NFL team, you buy an NFL team. I don't care if they stink at the moment you buy them or whatever. Okay, because they're valuable and they're always going to be valuable. And wins and losses, they ebb and flow. But you got to think, like, that ownership group from the Walton all the way down to people who just have a stake in it must be like, we bought this team at its worst possible existence ever.
Probably could have got a better deal if you waited.
Right? Like, we bought the Broncos at the worst that they've ever been. Like, in terms of bad contract for this quarterback that can't play, a coach that's way out of his league, the fan base now that's so angry at us, it's apathetic. We can't score. There's no excitement at the stadiums. $12 tickets. Like, obviously you can turn it around. You can have a winning team in 2 or 3 years in this league. That's what it is. But they must be like, what is the, what did we walk into?
Yeah.
This, like, what did they do before we got here? What a disaster this is.
I'm worried for the, anyone who's in the front office all the way down to Nathaniel Hackett.
I'm too.
That I think there is going to be a major overhaul.
You don't spend $4.5 billion on a team and let just continue with the status quo.
Right.
Right.
Oh, give it one more year. See if they can turn it around.
What happens. No, you go, everybody's out.
Yep.
Everybody's out. But it's their fault on the Russell Wilson contract. They agreed to it. So just learn a little bit more about the business of this league before you buy into it. So, but $12 tickets.
$12 tickets.
Even at the Titans, even at their worst, when they were like fighting with Tampa Bay for the number one spot in the draft years ago, 6 or 7 years ago, even their tickets at the cheapest were like $40, $50. You still had to pay a good little chunk to go see them. It's a
$12. I mean, that's
one out of, you know, there's only 8 of these in a year, you know, whatever. And $12.
I mean, like I said, I guarantee you spend more money on just a drink.
Can you go to a baseball game in July of a mediocre team for $12 and get good seats?
No.
No, I don't think so. You might have to wait and maybe get them for like $5 in the outfield bleachers.
Yeah, but it's in the third inning.
That's right. Exactly. Goodness. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It is Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's in week 15. So if you watched the Giants and Commanders game last night, that was a little wild, wasn't it? Giants winning that one 20-12. Both teams were 7-5-1 going into the game, and both were tied for third in the NFC East. Now, even though there's 3 games left, there was a feeling like the winner of this game really did have kind of a leg up on securing that third spot. But you got to watch out because the Lions won yesterday, and they're now 7-7. Seahawks are 7-7, and there's some room here for a conversation about the, you know, where the Giants and the Commanders fit in the scheme of things. But the Giants win and the Commanders go to 7-6-1. That gives them a half game lead over both Seattle and Detroit. But late in that game, the Giants make a goal line stance to preserve the win. However, it was really controversial. There was a missed pass interference penalty that was not called. And then this very, very bizarre play in which Brian Robinson scored a touchdown. But Terry McLaurin was penalized for not lining up in the right spot. So what was being pointed out this morning by a number of people is, okay, so when you have an offensive set, right, we know that there needs to be 5 guys on the line of scrimmage, right? Center, 2 guards, 2 tackles. And then you have a tight end or wide receivers, and they're all at various points along the line of scrimmage. But if you're lined up behind the line of scrimmage as a receiver, what you want to do is you sort of give an indication to the official to see if you're okay, right? You're trying to look to see if you're offsides. You set yourself up. You usually tell the official. Official will give you a thumbs up. You move up a little bit to lock your place in. So Terry McLaurin was lined up just a few paces, just about a pace or so back of the line. There's video of him looking at the official giving him the okay, and then as soon as the play happens, he's penalized and the touchdown is taken off the board. And so what you're having is people saying, look, this is a real problem because this is not a penalty per se because he wasn't lined up right, but it's an etiquette thing, right? It goes back to, okay, look, this is sort of standard way we do things around here, and I thought I was in the clear of, like, you know, normally I line up, I look to you to see if I'm lined up okay, you tell me I'm lined up okay, and we just play. Now I look to you, you tell me I'm lined up okay, and then you give me a penalty. And so it has raised a lot of people's eyes to that particular thing because it's going to warrant the conspiracy theorist talk, right? That's going to start popping up. But it was a goal line stance on the Giants. It was controversial towards the end. There was a potential game tying situation there for Washington that didn't come to fruition, and the Giants ended up winning the game. So another close one last night. These are all getting pretty tight. I'm not going to dive into this college versus pro debate because it really, whenever somebody talks about which is better, right, the college game or the pro game, I always say it's not a good question to ask because it never comes with objectivity, right? You're never asking somebody brand new to football that's absorbed college football and has absorbed professional football and then can make an honest assessment of either one, right? Do you remember in the 1980s they had the Pepsi Challenge? Do you remember that where they had the two Cokes and they hide the two Cokes and then they say, take one, right? Well, what inevitably, where Pepsi won that all the time, where Pepsi was winning that, there's been people who have scrutinized that because if you give somebody two things and you say which one tastes better, the one that's sweeter in the initial sip or the initial taste is the one that usually wins. So what you found was that Pepsi was winning the Pepsi Challenge in terms of take a sip of this and take a sip of that. But when you ask somebody to drink a whole Coke, a can of something, Coke would win out because Pepsi was rather sweet. And after a while, the sweetness sort of got to you. It's similar in a way when you evaluate college football to the NFL football. If I take you to Alabama and ask you or Tennessee or Ohio State or Texas, and I say to you, we leave and I go, well, there's your taste of college football. Now I'm going to take you to Jacksonville, or I'm going to take you to L.A., or I'm going to take you, like, you're going to go with the one that tasted a little sweeter, right? You're naturally going to say, oh, no, my time in Knoxville was much more fun than it was in Jacksonville, right? But if I say to you, look, in the long haul, here's one element of the game that the NFL game has that the college football doesn't have, and that's a parity, or at least the drive to parity, right? College football can't have parity because parity, there's no rules in place for it. Like, everybody gets the same scholarship amounts and everything, but Nick Saban can go get every 5-star recruit in the country and your school may get one, if any, right? So there's no rules about parity. In the NFL, there's a salary cap. There's a draft. You have to manage all of those things correctly. You have to have the right scouting department. You have to manage your money well. If you fail at any of these, you're going to be a lousy football team. If you succeed at these things, you're going to be a real, real good football team. There's a lot of luck involved. Maybe you take a Josh Allen, for example, that everybody says, what the hell are you doing? Or you take a Patrick Mahomes and people go, what the hell are you doing? And they turn out to be megastars in the league. And sometimes you take a Baker Mayfield and you send him off and now he's playing for his third team in a very short career. There's a lot of luck that's involved. But in the end, the goal is parity. So, yeah, if I take you to a college environment where there's 30,000 screaming students amongst the 60 other thousand people that are there losing their mind in an area of the country where that might be the most entertaining thing on the calendar, there's a different feeling than if I take you to New York City for a football game, an NFL football game, amongst all of its other entertaining options. But the reality of it is that college football cannot give you what the NFL gave you this weekend, right? Which is Jacksonville climbing back from a 17-point deficit, and now they're one game back of the falling team in their division. And oh, by the way, Tampa Bay blows a 17-point lead, and now there's three other teams behind them one game back. And the Vikings come back from 33-point deficit to clinch a playoff spot. And there's two AFC East teams that are playing down to the wire, and there's another overtime game over here, and there's another overtime game over there. And look at this team is kicking a field goal with 3 seconds remaining to win their game. College football doesn't give you that. It gives you some exciting games at times, of course it does, but it can't give you the week in and week out level of parity that the NFL gives you. The quality of play may not be up to your standards. The excitement and atmosphere may not be up to your standards. The sense of urgency that college football is going to lose with the playoff, but it had at least last year. But the reality of it is there was a lot going on this weekend in the NFL. There was a lot of games decided on its last play or near its last play. And unfortunately, college game is never going to give you.
is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Good Tuesday for you. Eric Hedholm will join us next hour. We'll talk NFL. Again, a really, really wild weekend. Really was. I mean, seriously. And you know what was great about it? I was talking about this, about the parody, okay? And you look, I love the college game. I was a college football fan in an area of the country where college football just was not a thing. And it's one of the reasons why I wanted to go south and experience college football. I've always loved college football. I was a Heisman fan for a long time. I listened to Keith Jackson. I was very interested in the polls and all that. And to be honest with you, many of my friends growing up in New Hampshire, hardly any of them cared about college football. Some of them just did not care at all. And I loved it. But I've always been an NFL guy first. And I think weekends like we just had really show you, you know, on a professional level where there's rules in place to try to bring the closeness of teams together is just going to bring you not necessarily a better experience. Because like I said, there's nothing more crazy about than going to a big college football game. If you go to I don't care what it is, Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama, Tennessee, Alabama, Auburn, USC, you know, Notre Dame, there's some environments that just are that an NFL stadium will never, ever, ever compare to. It just won't, because there is a level of urgency in college football and a level of rivalry that, like, think about this for a second. What's the biggest rivalry in the NFL? Like, what's the one rivalry that you say that's the Ohio State Michigan of the NFL? Can you think of one? You really can't, right? Why? Why? Because you can make cases for teams that have rivals multiple places, right? Ohio, I worked in Denver for 10 years. It was always Raider week, Raider week, Raider week. And so you can make the case that Denver and Oakland back then were the biggest rival in the league. But is it? Is it on the same level? I mean, do people in New England go, oh, hold on, let me slow down and watch Raiders-Broncos?
And any NFC East fan will have words with you.
Right? But here's the thing. Ohio State doesn't say, oh, we have a rivalry with Michigan, but you know what? We also have a rivalry with Penn State. And, you know, Michigan State sometimes gets on our nerves. And, you know, every now and then we play Wisconsin, and that drives us crazy. Auburn doesn't say, you know, we love our matchup with Alabama. That's fun and everything. But, you know, our matchup with Georgia, the old South's, you know, longest rivalry, we value that just as much as we value our game against Auburn. I mean, Alabama. Nobody says that, right? Texas doesn't say, oh, our matchup with Oklahoma is cool, but, you know, it's fine when we play Baylor. It's just as intense. But in the NFL, if I ask a Cowboys fan, who do you hate the most? They'll probably say whichever team in the East is bothering us the most in any given year. They hate the Eagles. They hate the Giants. They hate Washington. Washington hates Dallas, hates New York, hates Philadelphia. Philadelphia hates all those three. The Broncos hate the Raiders, but they also hate the Chiefs, and the Chargers get on their nerves, and the Chargers don't like the Chiefs, and the Chiefs don't like the Chargers, and Saints don't like the Falcons, but the Saints don't also like the Buccaneers. Like, there's never one matchup that says, this is the one.
No. No, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm a product of the AFC West. You're in love with the AFC North. For you, for me, my team has three rivals.
Yeah.
Same with yours,
same
right?
Same thing.
We have three rivals.
Yep.
And each one is more important than the other.
NFC North, same thing. Bears and Packers have been playing since the 30s. But you know what? Same thing with the Lions.
Yeah.
Right? So it's all so again, if I take you to a big atmosphere, it's like I was saying earlier, it's like drinking the Pepsi, not knowing it's like, oh, this is sweet, this is delicious. But the NFL goes, wait, you think the Chiefs are playing Houston, and you think it's the equivalent of Alabama playing Chattanooga. But it isn't. It isn't. Because the Houston Texans, as bad as they are filled with NFL football players that, you know what, can play. And if they play right, they can make this game interesting, and they did. Same thing with the Bears. Oh, the Bears have lost six in a row. They're 3-10. And here are the Eagles. They've got one loss. And the Bears can't seem to do anything right but run the ball, but whatever. Nope. That game goes down, and it's a close game in the end. Like, that's the way this league is. That's the way this league is designed. It's the Kansas City Chiefs should have won that game 42-3.
Yeah.
But it's an NFL game, so you can't really say that that was expected. If Alabama plays Chattanooga, they better win 55-0.
One thing we've never said either, right, is that if in college football, if there's a shutout, that doesn't seem impossible.
Right, right.
I mean, if Michigan shut out Ohio State, we would be shocked.
We would be blown away, right? It would be amazing.
But, like, you know, using your example, if Alabama shut out Chattanooga State, yeah, that's kind of expected,
it's
right?
Kind of expected, right. So,
but you get one in the NFL, we're like, how does this happen?
Yeah.
Teams should never get shut out in the NFL.
And so that's what I'm kind of getting at here, is what this weekend was, when you had this much. I mean, again, it was a great weekend. You don't always get these weekends. Don't get me wrong. This isn't a standard. I mean, there were 15 games that were decided by one possession. They played 16 of them, right? I mean, five were won on scores on the final play. Three were overtime walk-offs. Two 17-point comebacks. All in this weekend. The greatest comeback in NFL history. All within this weekend. Some teams help themselves out tremendously with victories. Some are getting a little bit hurt and a little scary now with losses this weekend. I'm looking at you, Tennessee. You better right this ship or Jacksonville's going to come calling. And you're not going to have any gas in the tank to make a run at a playoff spot. So it was a really great weekend on that level in terms of what it gave you. It gave you, as we said earlier, the stupidest play I've ever seen in NFL history. It gave you a meaningless game in Denver between backup quarterbacks. Like, you get, you know, and you know what, Ron? Call me drinking the Kool-Aid. But in the next 3 weeks, I'm seriously going to be dissecting how the Steelers could sneak into the playoffs, what they need with 3 weeks to go.
You know,
the
need,
list is probably as long as my arm.
They'll need the Colts to lose at Jacksonville and the Chargers and Raiders to tie.
Yeah, right?
That's
exactly.
That's how it'll end up again.
That's
and
how it'll
you'll
end up.
Get your wish.
Exactly. Steelers sitting at 6-8.
Or not to tie, one of them to win.
Here's the thing. The Steelers play the Raiders, the Raiders, Ravens, and Browns to close out the season, right? Now, those are tough games because the Raiders are right there with them too, right? The Raiders are 6-8. Like, all right, we're not mathematically out of it, but we're hanging in there. You never know. You never know. There's a lot of wood left to be chopped in this league right now, right? If you're 6-8, if I'm supposed to buy you as a playoff team at 6-8, not buy you at 6-8, but I'm supposed to buy the Patriots at 7-7, that's one game with three to play. If you're 6-8, you're still in this thing. You need some work. You need some help, but you're still in this thing. I mean, I'm not all for expanding the playoffs to everything, but it makes it a lot more fun when there is that one extra one. Because imagine if we had back to the old way of doing it, when we didn't have the extra playoff team, we'd be like, wow, New England, Jacksonville, outside of winning the division, you're not going to catch Baltimore and Miami, right? You're not going to catch those. Like, those teams are playing really well. They're expected to win a few more games, and that'll be it. That'll be the wild card race. But now you've added one more layer of mediocrity to it, right? Just one more layer of, hey, 7-7, you're right in the thick of it. But right now, the Chargers are 8-6. They own the spot right now. They own the sixth spot. Seventh would be Miami. Is that it? Is that what?
Or is it flip-flopped?
It might be flip-flopped. The Chargers might actually be the seventh seed. Let me just take a quick glance.
Yeah, I'm looking real quick, too. I always forget.
Yeah.
Because this is the time of year where
the Dolphins are 8-6, too. Yep, no, the Dolphins are 7.
Yeah, they are 7.
Yeah, the Chargers win the tiebreaker over Miami based on head-to-head win percentage. So there you go.
Yeah, that's when it gets weird.
But the Steelers are way back of a pile of teams that are muddling around 6-8.
But not eliminated.
Not eliminated. The Colts aren't eliminated either. But the, you know, Jacksonville's 6-8, the Raiders are 6-8, the Browns are 6-8, the Steelers are 6-8, the Jets and the Patriots are 7-7. So you are talking about six teams that are all within 1-2 games of Miami and the Chargers for that fight. And in the NFC, the Seattle Seahawks and the Detroit Lions are 7-7. Look, I don't believe in moral victories, but I think if you're a Lions fan, are you not thrilled to death at how this season has been played out for you? Right? Like, if they don't make the playoffs, you're still feeling amazing how great that is?
I mean, yeah.
Start Zach Wilson yesterday.
You still have a chance to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a slim one.
Slim one, but you're still kicking around.
You know, who's to say that the Giants and Commanders can't just all of a sudden nosedive?
Yeah. By the way, have you seen any team mismanage a clock like the Jets did yesterday in that final minute? Bill Cowher, you know what? God bless these guys that are not afraid to be on TV, getting the big bucks to be on TV, and calling out teams and situations.
Yes.
So many of these guys don't want to do it. They're looking ahead. They're like, well, I don't want to anger anybody. I don't want to tick anybody off. I might be looking for a job. So I'll say everything vanilla. But Bill Cowher on the set of CBS at the end of that game said, I have no idea what Robert Saleh was thinking. Why that team had three timeouts and didn't call him. He was like, look at this play. And he shows this play. He goes, right here, he catches it. The clock is running. You've got three timeouts and they don't call it. And then they fast forward it to the end of the next play. He looks, look at what happened. 25 seconds was taken off the clock between the moment the catch was made to the incompletion on the next play. And they didn't call a timeout. Good for Bill Cowher to say, awful, awful clock management.
No, it's refreshing when an analyst goes all in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Go all in. Don't tell me everybody's awesome and everybody's great and everybody works hard. I don't want to hear it. Robert Saleh screwed up. The Jets screwed up. They had three timeouts. Should have taken all three on that final drive. I don't know what they were waiting for. Hold one so you can kick the field goal. You can throw a pass down the middle, and then you've got one to set up your field goal so you're not scrambling for a
But it is,
spike.
Again, I mean, it's that situational football. You know you have no timeouts left. I know you need to get a pass, you need to get down the field, but there's no way unless, was it Elijah Moore that caught that final ball?
Yeah.
Unless he was able to get out, but I mean, the Colts didn't care. It's like, go ahead and catch a pass over the middle.
I don't know
we're
what
guarding
you're holding,
the sideline.
I don't know what you hold timeouts for in a final drive. What? Like, you've got...
I can understand one.
You need to keep one. You should keep one in your pocket for the field goal, right? Because you don't know what the down and distance circumstance is going to be, right? You may need to go 20 yards down the field. You might be able to complete that pass. It doesn't matter if it's a first down or not, but you're good. There's some distance for you and your team to regroup. You may not have time to regroup to spike the ball to set up the field goal. You may not get a first down, and that might be fourth down or third down, and a spike would make it, make you turn the ball over, right? So there's a lot of circumstances that you can't. So keep the timeout, but it feels like coaches are treating this like gold. Like there's currency at the end of the game when they can cash in their timeouts and they get tickets to buy prizes at the concession stand. Like what are you doing with them? If you're not going to take one, if you're in the final minute of the game and you throw a complete pass, it does not go out of bounds. If you're not going to take one there, when will you take one? Because here's the thing: when you're on a final drive, as everybody knows, you have ways of stopping the clock. Right, you can throw to the outs, you can spike the ball. So or you throw an incompletion. It's not really by design, but nevertheless it stops the clock if you need a reset. So you have ways of manipulating the clock, right? Go out of bounds, spike it, incompletion, throw it away. Okay. So if you complete a pass and the clock is rolling and you have three timeouts, if you're not, tell me what circumstance you are going to take it other than to set up a field goal. It doesn't make any sense. Nathaniel Hackett does this in Denver. Nathaniel Hackett had to hire a guy just to tell him when to take timeouts. Like, this should be standard. Saleh knows better. I'm not saying they would have been able to move the ball up closer and had a shot. I don't know. But he didn't give his team the best chance of doing that by not, putting those timeouts in. All right, as we continue, it is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hour number three coming up. We got Eric Hedholm will join us from NFL.com, formerly Yahoo Sports. We'll talk to him about Week 15. I'd love to tell you that a Monday night matchup tonight was impactful, but it's not. It's just the Packers and the Rams. You know what? I might just be interested in Baker Mayfield's career resurgence, but I'm not holding my breath. Sometimes you just catch lightning in a bottle, everybody. So what are you going to do now, Mr. World Cup Soccer, now that it's over and you got 4 years to digest the fact that it's coming to North America?
Depression.
Yeah, right?
But then, you know, we have professional soccer starting up this weekend, so.
I think it's neat that it's every 4 years. I think it allows that level of anticipation.
Well, I mean, and when you break it down this way, I mean, the World Cup's every 4 years, but, you know, in between those 2 years or next in 2 years' time, we have the Euros, the European competition, and the Copa America, the South American competition. So you do have a sense of, you know, I guess, you know, soccer going on where it's country against country for a major tournament.
Yeah.
They have the same thing here. They call it the Gold Cup, but, you know, it's not that exciting.
Well,
until you get to the semifinals.
I'm looking forward to 4 years from now. I'm looking forward
I'm
to it.
Curious.
You know, I'm curious.
I'm really curious to see what, you know, how it's going to be received, what the show will be like here.
Yeah, but, you know, Qatar pulled it off, I guess, right? All the controversy, all the negative stories that came out, in the end, it was over. They did it. They built a city of stadiums. They built a city of, you know, with people who were downtrodden enough to build it for them in horrible conditions. The world came, the world saw, the world left, and the World Cup was awarded to Argentina. Great job.